the day is United States against Ryle. Mr. Henderson.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Peter Henderson from the University of Illinois College of Law, here under the direction of Dan and Hansmeyer of the Federal Defenders for the Central District of Illinois. This case has whittled down to one issue in light of Dorsey, and that is whether the conceded procedural error at the district court was harmless. Because of the ambiguity in the record and because of the fact that the government cannot meet its burden to show that the error was harmless, this court should remand for resentencing at the district court. This court's
the error. The district judge, following circuit precedent at the time, said the Fair Sentencing Act didn't apply. But, of course, the district judge also said it doesn't make any difference whether the Fair Sentencing Act applies. I would give the same sentence if this were powder cocaine. I mean, that's a statement of using a 1-to-1 ratio, and the Fair Sentencing Act is 18-to-1. So it sounds like the district judge has already said, I'm giving your client a benefit relative to the Fair Sentencing Act. How is that even an error? I don't even understand how we get to harmless error.
Well, Your Honor, the procedural error was that the district court explicitly started out by miscalculating the guidelines level, and that was, as it was according to circuit precedent at the time, but now has been overturned by Dorsey. The district court started by calculating the offense level at 37, which yielded a guidelines range of 360 months to life. In light of Dorsey, that is procedural error. A miscalculation of the guidelines is procedural error because now Mr. Riles would be subject to an offense level of 34, which carries a guidelines range of 262 months to 327 months. So that's the error. Now, as Your Honor pointed out, the issue is whether that's harmless because the court did say that it did not believe the discrepancy between powder and crack warranted a lower sentence, that it would have imposed the same sentence had the crime involved powder cocaine. However, I think there's an inferential leap between that statement and the court saying explicitly, had the Fair Sentencing Act applied to Mr. Riles, I would have sentenced the same. And in fact, the court said, after it reviewed Mr. Riles' personal history, criminal history under 3553A, the court explicitly said, nevertheless, it's not necessary to sentence you within the guidelines to achieve the statutory purposes of sentencing. And what I take that to mean is that the district court performed a downward departure from the 360 months to life.
No such thing as a downward departure after Booker.
Yes, Your Honor. I apologize for my imprecise terminology. What I mean to say is that the district court had in mind the term of imprisonment of 360 months to life and instead
said... So do you think the district court was just not being truthful when she said, I would give the same sentence if this were powder cocaine rather than crack?
I believe...
The district judge was not accurately disclosing her intent or plan?
Yes, Your Honor, but I think that the district court was really responding to the history of this litigation. The reason why this case was back to the district court on remand was in light of Korner. And in Korner, this court held that a district court can consider arguments about the discrepancy between powder and crack cocaine. So I think the district court, in saying that sentence, that it would have imposed the same sentence had the crime of conviction involved powder cocaine, is addressing the Korner decision and is not addressing the Fair Sentencing Act in general. And that's important because at a harmless...
And not laying out the rationale for making that statement. That's the heart of your argument.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And the reason why that's important is because at this stage, to prove harmless error, the government has to prove with some certainty, must be able to show that the guidelines error did not affect the district court selection of the sentence imposed at all. And this court just recently, last month, said, in a similar context in Trujillo-Castillon, when the government asked this court to speculate about the district court's rationale, at the expense of the defendant, this court explicitly said, we shouldn't have to, and we won't. because clarifying the basis for the defendant's sentence requires a brief resentencing procedure, and that's a very small price to pay to make sure that we get it right.
And the number of months that are at stake here?
Well, the number of months at stake here is a compelling reason to send it back to the district court. The 280 months is 80 months lower than the incorrect guideline range that the district court calculated. Given that the new correct range is 262 months to 327, that's 100 months further down. Now, that's not to say the district court will go that far down, but it is a significant amount of time. And to speculate at the expense of the defendant, as this court has said, is unwarranted.
And can you speak to this supervised release error that was made, although there was a waiver situation here?
Yes, Your Honor.
8 versus the 6 years.
Right. Under the pre-FSA law, the mandatory minimum was an 8-year term of supervised release. Now, of course, it is a 6-year mandatory minimum. The district court said nothing to the effect of its rationale behind the term of supervised release. As to the waiver, because of the change in this law, throughout this litigation at the district court and on appeal, we have argued that the Fair Sentencing Act should have applied to Mr. Riles. That includes all aspects of the Fair Sentencing Act, be it the term of incarceration or the term of supervised release. Just recently, in United States versus Brown, following Dorsey, this court remanded that case, in that case, a non-existent mandatory minimum fine was imposed. District court believed it had to impose a mandatory minimum fine. In fact, it didn't. That was plain reversible error because of the lack of a real mandatory minimum, as here. The 8-year mandatory minimum no longer applies. It's now a 6-year term. But also in that case, even though the arguments focused on the Fair Sentencing Act itself, the term of incarceration, it was remanded for a full resentencing. It was not simply remanded on the term of incarceration, which had been argued and briefed and presented in front of this court. So I think the waiver of the argument doesn't apply because the Fair Sentencing Act has been raised in all stages of this appeal. And that should include the term of incarceration and the term of supervised release, as it did in Brown. The last thing that I'll say is that I believe the government will argue that the term of 280 months, because it's within the new guidelines range, should be upheld, should be affirmed. But that confuses the issue. As this court said in Abbas, proving harmless error is not the same thing as proving that the sentence was reasonable. So for those reasons, we'd request that this court reverse the sentence, vacate the sentence, and remand for a resentencing procedure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Henderson. Ms. Rumbelow.
Good morning, Your Honors. Rita Rumbelow for the United States. This case did not involve on remand for resentencing, just the issue of corner. Judge Crabb, on page 14 of the sentencing transcript, talked about the FSA. She discussed the amendments to the statutes and the guidelines in relation to crack cocaine since Mr. Riles had last been sentenced. She then calculated the FSA guideline correctly, 262 to 327 months. So yes, technically, was there procedural error that still on the statement of reason she indicated that the guideline range was 360 to life? She kind of had to. That was the law at the time. But she then sentenced Mr. Riles to the FSA guideline range, towards the lower end of the FSA guideline range. And as Judge Easterbrook noted, she explicitly stated, I don't know how much more clear she could be, I would give you the same sentence if you had delivered powder cocaine. So for that reason, it is harmless error. It absolutely is. The court is not left wondering what sentence would Judge Crabb impose if the court were to remand on the substantive sentence itself. Period. She said, this is it. This is as far as you go. If you had delivered powder cocaine, you know, these are the amendments. I'm giving you the advantage of the amendments. And she gave him a 280-month sentence. She clearly knew the discretion that she had at that resentencing hearing, and she exercised it correctly. So I think that the government has proven harmless error. As for the issue of supervised release, throughout the defendant's submissions, they keep trying to imply that an 8-year term of supervised release is unlawful. That is not true. It's not an unlawful term of supervised release, and it's not an illegal term of supervised release. The statute says that the mandatory minimum term of supervised release now under the FSA is 6 years. It doesn't give a maximum term of supervised release.
Well, did the district judge make an equivalent statement with respect to supervised release? Did the judge say, I'd give you 8 years of supervised release even if the Fair Sentencing Act applies?
No, she did not.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Well, if the court considers the issue of supervised release to be a problem, then the government contends that a remand, a very, very limited remand, is the only thing required in this case, and it would be solely on the issue of supervised release. But we do stand on our grounds under the waiver argument that we put in our position statement, because they did not raise it in their initial brief. And again, there's nothing unlawful about an 8-year term of supervised release. We do stand by our waiver argument, but in the alternative, we conclude, or we suggest respectfully, that only a very limited remand on the issue of supervised release.
So your position, bottom line, is that she didn't need to give any more of an explanation of the relationship between the act and the sentence than what she said.
Right. Not in this case. Not because she specifically stated I would impose the same sentence if this involves powder cocaine. And she talked about the FSA and the amendments. And then sentenced squarely within that guideline range. And so based on Judge Crabb's very explicit statements and reasoning.
But, of course, when she made that statement, she didn't say, and, of course, that's because, you know, of your terrible criminal record or your criminal history, or, and that's because, I mean, she didn't go any further than just making that statement, right?
She did not, right, she did not downward vary based on 3553A. She calculated the FSA guidelines, recognized the disparity between crack cocaine and powder cocaine, went to the 1-to-1 ratio, sentenced squarely within the FSA, and then said, and I would give you the same sentence as if it involved powder cocaine. So she didn't grant a downward variance based on 3553A factors, which I think is another reason that this court can find that any technical procedural error under the existing case law at the time is definitely harmless error. If the court doesn't have any further questions.
So you're gleaning that rationale from just how she strung together the various things and recognizing the FSA and these
Absolutely.
Various things.
Absolutely. Yes, Your Honor. Does the court have any further questions?
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Henderson?
Just briefly, Your Honor.
I just want to quote from a case that actually was decided by this court yesterday, and that's U.S. v. Jones. In a very similar issue, this court said the FSA range should have been the starting point range, not the end point range, based on a downward departure after considering the 3553A factors. As the court reversed and remanded in Jones for defendant Ivory Watson, we would ask the same in this case. Thank you.
Now, can I ask one question?
Of course.
Now, if we were to remand this, do you think she could give an increased sentence above the sentence that was given?
I think the judge has the authority to conduct the same 3553A discussion.
Right,
that
right. So the government have an opportunity to argue for an increase and perhaps even on supervised could
yes, the government so can certainly argue for that.
The defendant's aware of that?
Yes, the defendant's aware of that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.